Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Spring is my favorite time to start a new workout routine. With the weather warming up, it feels easier to get into the rhythm of things. Whether you have 20 minutes or an hour for a Pilates class or outdoor guided walk, Peloton has everything you need to help you get going. Get a head start on summer with Peloton at onepeloton.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Hello, my name is Gary Mansfield, and this is the Ministry of Arts podcast, where each week I'll be speaking to a different artist. Now let's begin by bagging these bongos.
Yeah, right. Crazy.
Hello and welcome to episode 243 of the Ministry of Arts podcast. Firstly, as ever, thank you very much to our Patreons and those of you that have bought merchandise from our merch shop. We could not produce this podcast without you. And if you like what you hear and you think you might like to support us in some small way, go over to the Ministry of Arts Instagram profile where you'll find a Linktree drop-down box with all the information there. That out of the way, what's been happening this week? Well, I did go to the London Art Fair this week, thanks to Darren from the London Art Roundup. He got a bunch of art critics together to go down to the art fair and write about their best booth in 100 words or less. There was round about a dozen critics. Amongst those were friends of the podcast, Very Babs, Tabish Khan, and Joe's Art Histories podcast, Joe McLaughlin. For me, I chose Fiumiano Class, which was booth 36. Go over to London Art Roundup's Instagram profile and you will see why. I bumped into many a great person that I hadn't seen for a while. Dario and the gang from Jealous, ex-director of Jealous, Louise Fitzjohn, now running the ever-impressive Liminal Gallery in Margate. Who else was there? Martin Green from Duo Vision, Anna Goodman, Abstracts Publishing, and also Jack Trodd from Brushes with Greatness. And if I have forgotten anyone, I do apologise, but that was just off the top of my loaf, as it were. Oh, and also, Ray Richardson appeared on the Robert Elms Show Saturday morning. So if you didn't hear that, go over to BBC Sounds, look up Robert Elms, and log on to that. It was about midday. But anyway, back to today, and today's guest was Phil Heckles, aka Hercule von Wolfwinkel. And to be honest, when Alice Mara contacted me and told me about Phil, I couldn't quite place the name Hercule von Wolfwinkel until I'd done a little Google search, and as soon as I saw the first image, bang, got him. Now, Hercule went viral over lockdown with his rubbish pet portraits. He drew a very, what would you say, naive drawing of his pet dog. Posted it on his own Facebook page, which comedically was called Hercule von Wolfwinkel. Then a couple of his mates posted it, a couple of their mates posted it, and before you know it, tens of thousands of people were talking about it and ordering them. So when he sold a couple, he didn't want to profit from it, so he just said to his friends, just donate to a local homeless charity that he'd always championed, which is what they'd done. And then it snowballed. And it snowballed into something quite massive, as you'll hear in this episode. I mean, so much so that Phil literally gave up his job to do it. But the problem is, Phil is having conflicts with taking money from the money that is raised to compensate him losing his job. So he's just taking a wage from creating all of these drawings, you know? And from that has come books and merchandise and what have you. But Phil is super paranoid that anyone might think of him the same way as most do about Captain Tom's daughter and just fleecing off the charity. That seems to be a hurdle that Hercule can't get over. But either way, it's a properly heartwarming story. So please, come and join me as I spoke to Hercule Van Wolfwinkel. How are you, mate? You good?
I'm all right, yeah. Thanks for getting in touch and that. It was perfect timing because literally, like, I'm in London practically all week next week with various bits and pieces going on. Then we're going away on holiday for a few days. So actually, like, today is probably the only chance I was around for the next couple of weeks. So it was perfect timing, really. So, yeah.
My friend Alice Mara got in touch this week.
Oh, okay. Yeah, yeah.
And you've been chatting with her.
I met her. So we both did a sort of sponsored sleep out for Turning Tide, so one of the charities that I support. And I sort of met her briefly then. And it's the first time we'd met, and I'd started following her on Instagram. What she does is just so amazing. It's so good. I love discovering, like, you know, new artists and stuff like that, but it then always just sends my imposter syndrome into overdrive because you know, when you see these people just doing like amazing things. What she does, it's like, I'm sure probably there are, but I've never seen anything like it before.
I've seen stuff that's similar, but yeah. Hers is like so much better.
Yeah, yeah. It's just unbelievable. So talented.
Do I call you Phil?
Yeah, I mean, it's like, you can call me whatever you want to call me. Like, it's one of those things where I still find it weird being called like Hercule Van Wolfwinkel or Hercule or whatever. But then it's like, I do realize that on like the opposite side of the coin, it's weird for other people to hear me called Phil, like, because other people go, who's Phil? You know, like, the first time I was called Hercule, like verbally, as it were, I'd been doing the project already for like maybe like 5, 6, 7 months or whatever, and of course it was all online, so when people were like calling you Hercule and stuff, you never really, it wasn't tangible, I guess. Yeah, do you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, you were just reading it. And then the first sort of thing I went to where there was people there, and they were all only knew me as Hercule Van Wolfwinkel, and everyone was calling me Hercule, and it just really fucking spun me out. Like, I got home.
Is that from the North German Van Wolfwinkel?
It's the Scandinavian, actually. I mean, they might have made their way through Germany at some point. Well,
to save any confusion for those that are listening. So your name is Phil Heckles. You go by, or you're also known by, Hercule Van Wolfwinkel, which could be confusing for anyone listening. But could you explain, well, the first question I've got, Phil, how would you explain what you do to someone that doesn't know your work?
I always get in trouble for how I describe it now, right? But so I draw, like, I mean, some people call them silly. Other people call them endearing. I've always called them rubbish, like portraits of people's pets, basically. So that's what I do. I draw rubbish portraits of people's pets. Like, it's the simplest way to describe it. If that's kind of like your starting point for seeing them, like, if your expectations are they're rubbish, then like, if you end up eventually finding them endearing, then like, great. But like, don't come with any expectations.
That's like my dating profile.
I know, I've seen it.
Is that how we met on screen here? You swiped left or right or whatever it was.
Oh, brilliant. So that's what I do, yeah. Rubbish pet portraits.
Brilliant. Yeah. Could you tell us how they started?
I mean, they started being rubbish as well.
you've not evolved any. Yeah.
No. So basically, all of this has happened like everything that has happened in the last like 3 years or so has basically just happened by, I guess, like chance and just sort of going with things, you know, like, and but it all started, it was the summer of 2020. So like we were right in the middle of lockdown. I always say people, I can't remember exactly what stage of lockdown it was, but we weren't going out very much.
That was the scary bit, wasn't it? We were still thinking it was all going to die by the end of the year.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, I was hoping, but, so we had, my mum and dad had sent my little boy who was six at the time. They'd sent him some money. It was either for his birthday or it was for the summer holidays or something. Anyway, he had to make this thank you card, and we'd spent like weeks putting off like making this thank you card. And I always say like we had spent weeks putting it off, but like, I was 41 and he was six, so like you can decide who was actually the one like putting off making this thank you card. And it got to like, I reckon it was like probably like the latter stages of August, I think, like it was a couple of weeks left of August, and basically this thank you card just had to get done. And Sam wasn't interested at all. And so to just get him interested, I kind of got all his pens and paper out, put them on a dining room table, and I drew this picture of our dog, Nala, and just to get him interested. So like, Sam, come and have a look at this picture I've drawn of Nala. And it was like rubbish. And because I'm not an artist, like I've never drawn before. And if you see my pictures, that will be apparent. But it made us both like laugh, and it made him smile. And he started colouring in, I think this picture of Nala that I drew, and I think he started colouring in that very first one that I drew. And then he was interested. He was making his thank you card. And like, I was obviously just with him because I wanted to be with him doing this, but I had nothing to do. So I was looking at this first portrait that I'd drawn of Nala, which was rubbish, and I thought to myself, if I try like really hard, like I reckon I could do better. Like I genuinely reckon I could do better. And you know that thing, like, you know, someone comes to something knowing nothing about it but thinks they can, like, you know.
Yeah, of course.
So I got this picture up on my phone of Nala, and I tried my best to kind of copy this photograph on my phone of Nala, and it was worse than the first one. Like it was like but it made, again, it just made us laugh. It like made us giggle. And so I basically did what like any normal person does, like in that situation. I stuck them on Facebook. I stuck this picture on Facebook with this jokey comment about pet portraits had been for sale and they were 299 quid and come and place your orders. And it just went out to my mates. I've only got about 100 mates on Facebook. And it was just something I just thought, do you know what? It made us laugh. It made us smile. And I just thought, I just hope it makes someone else laugh, you know? Stuck
now,
it out.
Visually, if I can just butt in there, visually, for those listening, it was a black dog. Is this correct? Black dog in front of Venetian blinds.
That's it, yeah.
He was getting, he, I presume?
She.
Sorry. She That's was right. getting the sun coming through the Venetian blinds.
That's it.
So her face was black, yellow, diagonal.
Yeah, that's it. Like that, like basically photorealism at its best, capturing the light hitting the
the chiaroscuro
the fur
of the light hitting the dark.
And yeah, that was it. So basically sort of she looked a bit like a sort of bumblebee sort of dog, I guess. Yeah. You know, again, it was an attempt. I'm not gonna say whether it was a good attempt or a bad attempt, it was just an attempt at drawing a dog. And this post went out, and it just went out to my mates, and I kind of didn't really think anything of it. And then basically, like, by the end of that first afternoon, I had seven people, like my mates, just messaged me saying, can you draw my dog or like cat? Or I think actually one of the first ones I did was a lizard thing. I forget what they're, bearded dragon. That's it. Bearded dragon.
Yeah.
Like I say, we were in lockdown, right? And I had no more Tiger King to watch. And I was like, I'd perfected my banana loaf recipe. So I was like, I'd sod all else to do. And so I basically sat there and drew these seven requests that had come in. And every time I finished one, I just put it on my Facebook page, like in the comment section of this original post that I'd done. And was just like, you know, there you go. And people started sharing them. And I guess that was sort of like the start of it, really, that these sort of mates, say these sort of seven portraits that I'd drawn in the first day, people were then sharing them. Of course, that meant that they were suddenly, this post was reaching people beyond my immediate friendship group, you know? Yeah. So, and then like fast forward a week, I had about 100 requests for portraits. No. Well, like one charging anybody. It was all just like all just a joke and just a bit of fun. And the 299 thing was obviously just a joke.
Just between you and your mates.
Exactly. But what was, I think as they started to get shared beyond our mates, as it were, I think in a funny way, like the fact that the portraits had this sort of like what I felt was obviously a spoof retail price, 299. That was one of the things that actually I think like drew a lot of people into it, because people, so I would say, draw your dog, Gary, and then you then share it to all of your mates. And then your mates are going, you didn't really pay 300 quid for this, did you? Like that was what people were like asking. Yeah. It was like, because, you know, we were in lockdown, everyone had lost their mind and that, you know, like, and so, yeah, weirdly, this spoof retail price was kind of almost, I think, like what was, like maybe capturing people's like interest a little bit. There's this sense of like, you haven't really paid for this, like, have you?
There's
like
that, type there's thing. That thing where you do end up going, well, if people are paying this much, it must be worth it, and I must just be missing something here.
Yeah, exactly.
I might get one myself, you know.
Yes,
that's how shit starts, isn't it?
And I guess like, it sounds funny, but like maybe even more so sort of like in the art world, you know, where it's all so subjective. Do you know what I mean? Like, you know, what I like, lots of other people don't, and vice versa, but it doesn't make it necessarily any less valuable to me. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. So like, but... So,
I mean, several of your cats have got the same legs as Dali's elephants, haven't they?
Yeah, well, yeah, I mean, again, that's only because, like I say, when I now do like little online drawing tutorials and things, and the reason for the long legs is, I say to people, is if you keep the legs long, it gives you a bit of thinking time, basically. So as you're drawing down, really? Like away from the body, when you've like turned around to come back up again, like if you've kept them long, you've just got a bit of thinking time. You haven't got to panic then, like, well, basically.
What I thought was, now I saw one of yours with a cat sitting on a long vase with flowers in it, a long planter.
Yep.
And it looked like that maybe there was no dirt in it and the cat was just had really long legs and had been standing up in it and not sitting on the dirt at the top.
Yeah.
So it could well have had long legs in this imaginary world, you know.
Well, I drew that plant pot actually had, and again, this is actually where like my ideas outstrip my artistic talents, because actually that large pot actually had like little like terracotta feet on the bottom of it, you know, like
I saw
and
that.
So I tried to replicate that with the cat's feet. So that was exactly what I was going for. Like, you know, if you take the pot away, would the cat's legs actually just be as long as the pot? But I think a lot of people miss the little terracotta feet, because I just wasn't good enough to actually recreate terracotta feet.
No, but that's the thing. I mean, speaking arty now, if people miss that, they've missed it. It's for the ones that do get it and they go, that's what he's done.
Yeah, yeah. We got 100. I've got 100 requests for portraits. And that was the first point in which I nearly just stopped. Because it was all just a bit like, it all got like, you know, like I was getting friends requests from like people I didn't know and all that kind of stuff. And I'm quite private. I'm actually like naturally a really shy person. That's why kind of Hercule Van Wolfwinkel is my name. It's not a name that I created for this project. That Hercule Van Wolfwinkel has been my Facebook name for over 10 years. I had this fake name because I just didn't want that. You know, that kid that used to sit next to you in geography but wouldn't say hello to you in the pub, you know? Like, I didn't really want him, like, pouring over my Zanti 08 photo album on Facebook, you know? Like, so I had this fake name. So suddenly I'm getting all these friends requests from people. I was just a bit like, oh, do you know what? Like, nah, like, maybe this is the time to call it a day. But I guess, like, me being me, like, whilst I am, like, quite sort of shy and private, I had this, like, just little, like, it tickled my curiosity, I guess. And I thought, how far can we take the joke? You know, how far can we take this? So I set up the Facebook page, Pet Portraits by Hercule, like exactly as it exists today. And the gag then was, is like, look, I've gone into business and it's, you know, you better come and get your orders in before the price goes up to $399, you know, type thing.
Yeah.
But again, all just a joke. Like I wasn't charging anybody. Like there was no way I was taking any money for any of it. And then like the timeline now, because so much has happened in the last 3 and a bit years, like the timeline at the start is quite sketchy, but I reckon I was probably like, we were probably another couple of weeks down the line, maybe. And I don't know, the pages got up to, I don't know, about 800,000 people or something following it. And and I drew a picture for a mate, and he messaged me and he said, can you send me the original? Like, we love it. Like, can you send us the original? And I was like, well, yeah, like, but no one had. So I by this point, I don't know. Maybe, okay.
So you was just sending them the digital version of what you
Not even that. They just got uploaded onto Facebook page. And then if people want to like print them off, they can or whatever. Yeah. But like, just a, like literally, just all a bit of fun. Like that was like so. Yeah, they basically, I would draw it. I'd take a photograph of it. Like, not even in a, you know, they're not well lit or anything. They're literally just on my iPhone. You know, you can see my shadow hovering over it, all that kind of stuff. Take a photo of it, put it onto Facebook. Everyone has a laugh, and you move on to the next. And that was all it was. And it was just, as I say, just a bit of fun. And then, you know, when I set up the page, as I say, like maybe we got up to like 800,000-ish followers, maybe after a couple of weeks. And Matt wanted this original, and he was the very first person that ever wanted an original. I'd probably drawn about 30 maybe portraits by this point in that first couple of weeks. So I sent him the original, and then he messaged me back and we had this conversation, and he wanted to give me some money for it. And he was like, you know, we really love it and we're going to frame it and it's going on the wall. And so we want to give you some like money for it.
It has
and
a
like,
value, yeah.
Honestly, it's like this drawing, it was a golden retriever, and it looked like, my drawing looked like somebody who'd like tried to taxidermy a lion, right? Having never done any taxidermy before in their life and never seen a lion before in their life. It was horrendous, this picture. And there was no way I was taking any money for it. Like, there was absolutely no way. I was like, and he was adamant. And we had that back and forth, you know, like when, you know, your mate pays for a taxi home from the pub and then you have that like, yeah, don't worry about it, mate. In that back and forth, I just said to him, look, Matt, if you want to do something, just donate some money to our local homelessness charity, like Turning Tides. And they're like a charity that we support as a family. And then at least you feel like you've given something for this drawing. And I'm comfortable knowing I haven't taken anything for it.
You've got exactly what you think it's worth.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly right. And do you know what he did? Like, he did make this donation, and he donated, I think it was about 30 quid, 40 quid or something. To Turning Tides. And then like this light bulb moment came of, you know, actually maybe we can keep this all as a bit of fun. Like, that's at the heart of everything. Keep it all as a bit of fun. But, you know, maybe we can kind of use these portraits and the interest that's kind of like been generated around them to just do a bit of good. And so, again, me and Matt had this conversation because he'd made his donation and stuff. And he was like, look, why don't you look into sort of setting up a Just Giving page? And, you know, that was just in looking into how to set one up, I'd set one up. It was that easy to do.
Yeah, yeah.
So now I've got this Just Giving page, and I just put a note out to the group, and I just said to everybody, look, like, the portraits are still going to be free. Like, of course, I'm not going to charge anybody for them. But if you're unlucky enough to get yourself a picture and you just want to cheer yourself up by making a donation, like, here's a link, and maybe we can just do like a little bit of good with these portraits. And being honest, since then, we've just never looked back. And the response has just been like, you can throw any adjective you want at it, but like, overwhelming is probably the sort of the biggest one. So when you set up a Just Giving page, you have to set a target, right? I set the target at 299 quid because, like, joke works.
Yeah, yeah.
And my other half said to me, like, don't set it so high. Like, you'll never raise 300 quid with these, like, shit portraits that you're drawing. She was like, You know, like a target, if people think a target is like completely unachievable, they might not even start trying to get there. Do you know what I mean? Like, but I was like, nah, like it works in like in the context of the gag. And like, even if we don't raise 300 quid, who cares if we don't hit a target? But we hit it in like 2 days. Like, we hit 300 quid in like a couple of days.
And how long do they run for?
Well, the fundraisers,
yeah,
they're still going. So,
oh, is it? Oh, okay.
So we're now, fast forwarding through the project, we now actually fundraise for two charities. So fundraise for Turning Tides, who are our local homelessness charity. So that was the first year of the project. We were solely fundraising for Turning Tides, and we raised 100 grand for them in the first year, and then basically coming into the second year. So we hit 100 grand on the Turning Tides fundraiser. It was like literally about a week before the first anniversary of the fundraising starting. And I was like really mindful that we'd suddenly like hit these two big milestones, you know, we'd hit this 100 grand and then it was a year anniversary. And I was sort of worried a little bit like that maybe people might think, is it now the end of it type thing? You know, if he's hit these milestones, is that kind of where? So I think just to kind of like try to prove that it was still, you know, we had no plans to sort of slow down. From the second year onwards, I introduced a second charity, which is a charity called Street Vet. And they basically provide free veterinary care for the pets of homeless men and women. So it was like a perfect fit for me because here I am, like raising money and awareness for a homelessness charity by drawing people's pets. And then now I've got a chance to support a charity that helped the pets of homeless men. It was like a no-brainer.
Perfect. Yeah, yeah.
And so we started fundraising for Street Vet from the second year. And actually today, literally this morning, we've hit 100 grand for Street Vet.
Brilliant.
And we've raised another 90 grand for Turning Tide. So overall, the fundraising as I sit here right now is 291,265 quid from these crap portraits.
It's nearly like 1,000 times more than you initially wanted.
Yeah, yeah. And
I mean, I've been in situations, not as big as this, but I've been in those situations where you have this little idea, you sort of throw it in the world to see what happens, and then all of a sudden it starts to run away from you and you sort of, you don't lose control, but it starts getting bigger and bigger. It's a bit of a daunting thing at one point, isn't it? You have to sort of stop a minute, look around you, see what you're doing and then make a plan. Whereas before there was no plan.
Yeah. I mean, I'll be honest with you. I still haven't done that. I still haven't, and this has turned our world, like it's now a full time. Again, I don't know whether I'm fast forwarding the story too much. I don't know how much you want to know, but you know, to keep this project going, I quit my job in May 2020, like May last year.
And what was you doing, if you don't mind me asking?
I worked in commercial property. And so I worked for a firm of local surveyors and worked in their commercial property department. It was a 23-year career. I'm a lot poorer now, but richer in many other ways, you know.
Yeah.
But basically what happened was, probably in hindsight, weirdly at the time, bringing on the second charity maybe wasn't the best decision. Don't regret it. Don't regret it at all. But at the time, because I call it the circus, basically, that surrounds all of this whole project, which is like basically everything that just is beyond me just drawing a picture of a pet on my dining room table and chucking it on Facebook. That was just all getting like bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. So like a lot of like the media stuff was getting bigger. Like the page now, I mean, there's like just shy of 300,000 people on my social media. Like my Facebook page reaches between sort of 4 and 6 million people a month.
Wow.
And that's not me bragging. I'm not into all of that social media stuff, but it becomes a full-time job, like managing all of that. When we were, you know, again, in the early days when I was like running competitions, cause we do a lot of fundraising competition stuff. When you're running a fundraising competition and you're putting it out to 3,000 people, it's all a little bit of a laugh. It's all a little bit informal. When you're putting it out to 30,000 people, there's more people that are going to start questioning.
And a bit of responsibility things. There with it.
Right. When you're putting it out to, you know, 250,000 people, you've got to make sure that you're watertight on things. And so like, again, when we've, when you're then doing your competitions, or we've got the bigger projects and stuff going on, like the reality alongside my full-time job is at times I was doing like, and again, like when I had like book deadline, I've done two books and stuff now, when I had the book deadlines and stuff, like I was doing like 18-hour days for like 3-4 weeks straight. And it was just like, this just isn't sustainable. And actually, like the realization that that wasn't sustainable, it hit me like, without getting all deep, because that's not all, but it hit me like a bit of a sucker punch, really. And I was burnt out. You know, I don't want to say like I had fall down breakdowns or anything like that, but I was shot, you know. And actually, the decision that I made was that I was going to bring the whole Hercule project to a close, because I was just like, I just can't keep going. I can't keep doing it. And that was really hard, because like when you're averaging, like the fundraising was averaging about sort of just under $7,000 a month. And like you feel the weight of that, you know, like when you're like then having to make a decision that, to kind of like turn the tap off on that for the charities, you know, you even start questioning, you know, there was even a thing that was going through my head of like, you've been selfish, you know, like by making this decision to stop, like you're being selfish. And I really struggled with all of that. But basically, I'd say the decision was made to just bring the whole project to a close. I couldn't keep going as I was with this full-time job. And the bigger it was getting, the more it was kind of encompassing all of everything else. And so I actually had my last Facebook post written out, and I knew exactly when it was all going out. And it was the 1st of January, 2022. I was going to post my very last post, and I was going to thank everybody for all of their support. You know, again, I don't want to say that I was that low, but I was genuinely, I was at a really low point, like really, really low point. I was struggling with, there was lots of thoughts that were going through my head, and there was lots that was, that I was like just trying to kind of, weirdly, kind of that thing of like bringing it all to a close, like almost just trying to come to terms with it. Like it, and from the outside looking in, I guess people might be listening to this just thinking like, well, you know, what's he going on about? You know, like, but it was, it just felt like I was, it felt a little bit like it didn't really matter what decision I made, I was going to make the wrong decision. Like it really felt a bit like that. In coming to that decision and going through all of that thought process of bringing the Hercule project to a close and being like as relatively comfortable as I felt I could be with that decision, I kind of then just realized that I wasn't, you know, when the decision was in inverted commas made, even though that was a very private decision at this point, the decision was made, my mind was made up. There was no more kind of like chucking around all the what ifs. I was then like, I can't give this up. Yeah. There's still so much more good that I know that we can do with all of this. And I think...
Well, that's the point. Sorry for
butting in there, right,
Phil. But that's the point I was talking about earlier, is it gets to that point when you go, this isn't a joke anymore. This has run away from me. We need to sit down and plan, because there is something here. It has got legs, pretty long ones, but it has got legs. And we can do something with it. Is now a thing rather than a joke between mates that has just escalated a bit.
Yeah,
it's now out of your control.
And yeah, you've got to
reel it in.
Yeah, it kind of just felt like, I think ultimately what it really came down to was I just sort of felt like if I'd have stopped, I know I would have spent the rest of my life just wondering what if. And that isn't, weirdly, that's not a what if from a personal point of view in a, like at all. It's a what if from an overall project point of view, you know. I always say like none of this has ever really been about me, you know, like and when all the media stuff first started, again, I know I'm jumping around on the timeline, I'm really sorry Gary if this is getting confusing to follow, but when all the media stuff all started, you know, for the first few sort of like radio things I did and newspaper stuff that I did, I wouldn't let anybody use my real name. I didn't want anyone to know like it was me. I mean, you've seen the drawings, right? You've got to, you'd be able to deny that you're the one like drawing them. But it was also, I didn't want any of it to be like about me, you know? And so then when the first few TV stuff, when the first thing came up for a TV appearance, my first reaction was to say, no, I didn't want to do it. Because I didn't want to be out there and for it to be, you know, about me, you know. And so, like I say, the decision to carry on was never really about me personally, because actually, again, being really honest with you, if it was, then I would have stopped, because the easiest decision would have just been to stick to what I was doing for 23 years, not to take like this. But anyway, I jacked my job in, basically. So I went into work in the January, and I handed in my notice on a 23-year career. And I gave them kind of 4 or 5 months notice, because I've been there for so long. And they had been very good to me. And I'd worked for them since I was a 17-year-old kid. And, you know, like I wanted to be fair to them. And then so since May 2022, it's been a full-time project. And again, you know, when you talk about like taking control and stuff, if I'm really honest, I still don't feel like I've taken control, because I don't know what I'm doing. And that's not, you know, it's not in that kind of like, you know, no one knows what we're doing. We're all just winging it.
Is it like a simmering pot, Phil, where you sort of, you find yourself just about to bubble over and then you turn the gas down for a minute and then have to turn it up again, so it sort of fluctuates?
Well, I mean, you know, to be honest, it's been, I think the best analogy that I can use is it feels a little bit like I've had moments in, we've all had moments in life, haven't we? Like, but if I talk about them professionally, like even in my old job, where, you know, the day to day I knew inside out, but you'd still have moments where like you knew you were a bit out of your depth, yeah? You know, like you knew you'd bitten off a little bit more than you can chew with a project or a client or whatever. And you thought, oh, crumbs, like, you know, I feel a little bit out of my depth here. But you knew where the bottom was, right? You know, so you knew you were out of your depth because you knew where the bottom was.
Yeah.
And I feel like with all of this is that I've just been like plonked in the middle of the ocean. And I've got, so I don't even know how deep the bottom is, you know? I just feel like since I've taken it full time, it feels like I'm kind of swimming around in circles in the middle of the ocean, but I'm just about keeping my head above the water. Like that is where I'm at the moment, I'm just about keeping my head above the water. And like being brutally honest with you, like right now, I can't actually see the longevity in the project. And that comes down to just not knowing what I'm doing. And it like, I'm not stupid enough or arrogant enough to not admit that. And I think like what I need, if there is some longevity for the project, I think what I need is for somebody that does know what they're doing, maybe they're listening to this, to basically kind of go start swimming that way. Like that's the way you, and
just,
it's not going to be.
Even if you just put an artistic director in for just a month, just to, it's like bringing in an accountant to look at all your receipts and go, right, that and that, there you go, that's where
you are. So to prove my point, I don't even know what an artistic director is, Gary, like genuinely, like honestly, mate, like genuinely. But it just feels a bit like that. And I think as well, it's where it's also tricky, probably in the right word, but like I'm fiercely protective of the fundraising. So the only reason for keeping the project going is to keep the fundraising going. I say this and I don't know whether people believe me, but if the fundraising stopped tomorrow, it wouldn't matter how much I'm earning personally out of this project. I would stop. Yeah. I genuinely would. Like I would stop. Because for me, this project has, although it didn't start out as a fundraiser, like, and it wasn't a, you know, I didn't sit down with anybody and go, how can we raise some money for charity? I know, we'll draw some pet portraits. That came a little bit organically, but very early on. And that has become my real passion. Not really the art. I mean, I've thoroughly enjoyed getting into the art and exploring that. But they
can't survive apart, though, can they?
No, it's reached that stage where no, they can't, because the project is too big now.
They both feed off each other.
Yeah, they do. And so what I've basically done, so in order to basically try to make a living from it, is that the very first kind of decision process in all of that was that basically, okay, if I'm going to now step into this being a full-time project, the most important thing to do is anything that I'm currently doing or have been doing, which has driven the fundraising to this point, that's like completely ring-fenced. It's untouchable. We're not changing anything of the fundraising model. And, you know, being honest, the easiest decision to have made when I was looking to kind of take the project full time, the easiest decision to have made at that point, which would have also increased the fundraising, would have been to start charging for the portraits. Because now they're like the highest direct offer I've had for one is $4,500. When we auction them for charity, like the last charity auction that we did for one, I think was £1,850.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Now, when you draw them, just to get, I mean, I know you've said that you draw them and put them on your social media.
Yeah.
And that is what the person pays. Is that what the person pays the donation for?
So when it's the donations, so when people just make a donation to the charity, which actually, again, has never been compulsory, right? So the donations aren't compulsory. I say I have no way of checking. I probably do, but it sounds like work, right? So I don't even check if people have donated or not, because the donations have always been voluntary, and there's no minimum.
The inclusive side of it, Phil, isn't it? Because
yeah, and
it can be that 9-year-old who wants a
yeah, and but also
of Betty, their dog, you know,
it's that thing of, again, like when it started gaining, like. When it started gaining interest and popularity, and there was this realization that actually the originals have a value, which was way beyond anything that I could imagine. I didn't then want to like cash in on that either personally or from a fundraising point of view, because what I loved about it and do still love about it is the fact that it is just a lottery as to who gets picked. Like there's over 100,000 requests for portraits in my inbox. And it's just a lottery. Like it is just, I pick them at random. And then if people want to donate, they can. But I don't ever want to set like a minimum donation. I don't want it to become that the only people that can get them are the people that can afford £300. Because yeah. £300 to one person is worth the same as £3 to another, you know? Like, and I love the fact that everybody's got the same chance. I don't know. I mean, I know that I would lose enjoyment as well. Like, if I was looking at it selfishly. So yeah, the everyday deal is that the portraits are in essence free. Okay. And if you want to make a donation, you can, but there's no obligation to, and there's no minimum donation. If you get a portrait, which is a complete lottery as to whether you get picked or not, it gets uploaded onto social media and that's it. Basically, that's what you get.
And is that for their minimal donation?
For no donation if they don't want to. But because now of the interest that we've got in the project and there is now this value attached to physical originals, of which there aren't actually that many out there, we now occasionally auction off the opportunity to have your portrait drawn and you get the original. And then we offer them as competition prizes and raffle prizes and stuff like that. The last original that we auctioned off for charity was £1,850, I think. And do you know what? I hate drawing them, because you're thinking, I can't send them this.
It's a commodity, yeah.
Because you know, like when I know that no one's actually paid for them, or the worst thing is they've donated £10 to a charity, right? You know, you can really sort of take the piss, you know. So like the great example is one that I got a message from somebody, and it was basically their dog. They had these massive ears, like pointy up like ears. And in her message, it said, "Bet you can't tackle these ears." And so basically her portrait was literally just the top of her, the top of the head, like peeking over the, like the bottom of the page with these massive ears. And that was a, I think you might've just seen the tops of the eyes. And I was like, yeah, no bother. Like, and that was her portrait. And she loved it, you know, because it was like, because it was, it took the piss, you know, and that's what people, you know, well, they're not.
Looking from an arty point of view, you've created this Hercule Van Wolfwinkle world. So it doesn't matter what it looks like, as long as it fits into the realms of the world that you've created.
Yeah.
So I don't think you should put any pressure on yourself as to say, is this good enough? Because you, it doesn't want to be good enough. It needs to be bad enough.
Yeah, yeah. But I think so when
you're trying to make it bad, it won't be as bad. You just have to try and keep that same mindset you've done first of all. You just want to pull out the ears, make the eyes goggly, and, you know, a long flappy tongue, for instance.
Yeah, I just think it's hard to, like I say, when you've, when you can then equate a, you know, a value to it before you've even started, you know, like it's, I don't know, I find it hard to switch off from that. But but like I say, we don't do that very often. Like, we don't do that very often. And then the rest of the originals I've basically just got here sitting in archive boxes. And one day I'll eventually do something. I mean, my dream is to exhibit again. Like, I really want to do another exhibition again. I will do something with them at some stage, but it's, and again, I know that it upsets some people that they don't get the originals, but I haven't ever changed the rules. You know, it's always been that way. And so I kind of like feel a little bit like, just because it's become popular doesn't mean that the rules should change. You know, like, it's always been the deal that you don't get the originals. And then I think in terms of not selling them, it's just become a little bit of a beast that I just don't really know how to face, you know? So I don't.
Well, it feels to me, from an outsider looking in, the one that you draw on this bit of paper and put on social media, that could even be a small donation for that, for being included in the HVW world, you know. So that could be the donation. Even allow them a digital, send them a digital copy, a digital photograph, or scan it or something. That can be their one that they might get for a tenner. You know, and most people can afford a tenner. That's the donation. That keeps the donation will go in. The ones that you do on paper then could have a value of 200 quid if people want that as well. But they also get the, you know, it's like the second tier on Patreon.
So
the next one up is one of those, and they are 299 quid.
Yeah.
And they are worth every penny of 299 quid. But if it's like, and what size do you do it?
They're all drawn on A4.
Are they A4 printer paper that you do them on?
It's the shittest, like,
keep it there. It's got to keep there.
So the reason that it was A4 printer paper was because basically I was nicking it from work. So like, that's the
thing, Phil. What you've created is, you're an adult doing what a kid does just before dinner or after school, drawing the silly dog. It's got to be, I presume you use pencils?
I use pencil. And again, it's actually a bit of a mix in my pencil case now. So, but mainly it's just WH Smith. Just like their own.
That's where you've got to stay with those.
Yeah, I do. I've got some slightly nicer pencils that someone gifted to me, and I've actually got myself like a some nicer quality sort of like sketch paper and stuff. You can't create the same thing. Doesn't work.
Don't try and be arty. Try and be that kid. That's where you've got to keep it.
Part of the thing, and this is again where it comes down to what I said earlier about, like, you know, one of the things I've probably struggled with a little bit to take the project full time has been so fiercely like protective of the fundraising.
Well, and well, the fundraising, Phil, that could be the online bit, because that's how it's always been.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
The ones on paper are yours, I feel, should be yours.
Yeah.
Or go to the company that you may have created that you pay yourself from.
Yeah, yeah.
Because if that isn't sustainable, then this project can't go on anymore.
Yeah.
So you have to flourish to make that flourish.
I think it just feels like a little bit of a... I think it just... It feels like a change to... And it feels like a change to an element of what is a major part of the fundraising, which is this thing of like the pet portraits being free. And then suddenly once you start selling originals, they're kind of not free. And like,
but,
and,
yeah,
and
but I think if you've still got the free bit online.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's just.
I do a lot of charity exhibitions forever. I was doing it for nothing.
Mm.
Stressing myself, doing it on a day off, trying to sort this thing out, and it was all for nothing. And someone from a charity said, "You have to pay yourself.
Yeah, yeah.
You have to give yourself a worth, and you can't grow if you're trying to do everything on a shoestring."
No, I know.
And it did. It just made things so much easier. But I know where you're coming from. Is that you're going to feel like you're benefiting from the charity? The money that's going in your pocket could have been going to the charity, which is how I felt first of all.
Yeah, but I think there. It's. I think it's just as well. Like I say, what I was hoping I was going to be able to do was to like commercialize it by doing new things that was a step away from anything that we'd been doing that we were doing already. So, you know, we do sort of things like greetings, card, stationery, you know, that kind of stuff. And I think that where that feels comfortable is because it's like, well, we weren't doing any of that, you know, so it's not kind of touching the fundraising element like at all. It's not really kind of like adding anything new to any of the sort of pet, you know, the pet portrait element of it. It's just then taking these images that I am drawing and using them on other like products. We also donate a minimum of 10% of everything that we sell commercially to the charities as well. So again, it's this view of like we've increased extra revenue streams as well for the charities, and that kind of like feels and felt quite comfortable. And I guess I just sort of felt like then is that like, you know, if somebody buys you know, a note pad off me for like 10 quid or whatever, you know, it generates a bit of an income for me, but they get something back in return that they want. Do you know what I mean? Like, you know, there's some value into what they're donating, and 10% of that goes to the charity. And you know, kind of like happy days, whilst leaving the pet portrait side of it completely alone, like none of that changes, you know. And I just sort of battle with that a little bit, I think. And on the one hand, I also get that if I have to stop, then the whole thing stops. But then, I don't know, there's a part of me that also thinks, well, if that's just how it is, if the project isn't sustainable in a way that feels comfortable, then maybe that is just it. And what's also really hard is when you've kind of established something which is off the back of charity. And again, this didn't start as a charity fundraiser, but the majority of a lot of the attention that we've had, and certainly like the exposure and the growth that we've had has come off the back of the fact that, you know, I'm fundraising and I'm raising money for charity, and that's how I want it to be. And every time I do something, I see it as an opportunity to expose the charities, not myself, you know. And again, one of the beauties of what we do is because everything goes through Just Giving, is that there's like transparency, you know. But the problem
you
that you have...
You don't want to be like Captain Tom's daughter.
No. I mean, I don't, you know, like the last person I want to meet is Piers Morgan. But the issue that you then have is that when you've got something where there is, like rightly or wrongly, this kind of viewpoint that everything you do is for charity, then you get... So a really good example, Gary, is I drew a picture of long-term followers of the page, and that will know that like there's a big thing about herring on my page, haddocks and herring, and it's all to do with the little bios that I write up for the animals and that. And relatively long story short, somebody in one of the comments basically said something about circumcised herring. I don't know like why that was, but they did. And somebody then replied saying, can you draw a picture of a circumcised herring, right? And I said, if this comment gets like 1,000 likes or whatever, I'll draw a picture of a circumcised herring. And of course it did get 1,000 likes.
Of course, yeah. Before you got away from the keyboard.
Exactly. So I drew this picture of this circumcised herring, which is basically a herring and just wearing a pair of like yellow Y fronts, right? So like leave you to decide whether it was. This is what my fucking life has become, Gary. I'm sitting here talking to somebody about a circumcised herring, for God's sake. Yeah. Like,
well, you've made me picture it.
So I drew this picture, and then there's quite a few people like, oh, can I have it? Can I have it? And I was like, do you know what? I'm going to sell it. Like, why not, right? It's a picture I've drawn. It's my work. It's not a pet portrait. You know, people want it. So I stuck it on eBay and clearly put in the eBay listing that 20% of it was going to get donated to the charities. You know, I've got my own bloody bills to pay now as well, you know, but yeah. 20% of this is still going to the charities, and you get called out on it. Well, where's
yeah,
the other
80%?
I know you do. But you know, this then escalated to basically it ended up with somebody calling me scum skimming from charities. And I know that you should just ignore all of that, and I know, but again, part of the issue is, and this is again comes back to that thing of being fiercely protective of the fundraising, is part of the thing is if people lose faith in it, then yes, they'll stop donating.
Yeah.
And so and I'm really mindful that there is this thing of if people start to just think, oh, he's just cashing out now. You know, and it's like I know, and I'm comfortable in my own, you know, kind of head and thoughts and everything else, that everything that I'm doing at the moment is not cashing out in the slightest, you know. Yeah. But I just sort of feel like if you start going down that route of like actually sort of like charging for portraits or buy a sort of like just a step away from that kind of suddenly selling the originals, which is something that I've never done before, and I'm earning from that, it just feels, I don't know, maybe I'm wrong.
I don't see it as that. I mean, if you had an exhibition, even in the name of Hercule Van Wolfwinkel, if you put them up and they are all £299 each, for instance, if you've written yourself a manifesto, even if it's a mental manifesto, that's the charity work, this is mine, and you're given a percentage, which is like the caveat that you put on it first of all. Have you called yourself an artist yet?
It only ever when there's inverted commas involved.
Right. That might be the problem, because you're trying to live in two different worlds, the charity world and the commercial world. There is a crossover, and you have to be aware of that crossover. At the moment, you've got a barrier between them, you know,
yeah,
and you're not allowing them to cross over. You're frightened of that one person coming forward again. Mm-hmm. But they can both work, because if you put your exhibition forward and they are from 299 to £2,999, that's yours. You are the artist.
Yeah, I think I'd feel, do you know what? I would feel completely comfortable doing, let's say, an exhibition of African animals drawn by Hercule Van Wolfwinkel, you know, like an elephant, a giraffe, you know, that weren't people's pets. And I was selling them, and that was personal income. I would feel absolutely comfortable about that, because it's not the pet portraits. You know what I mean? It's like,
thing is, your focus is where you're getting the photograph from, because you're not going to go out to Africa and take your own photographs of an elephant, you're happy to get them off of Google, for instance. That's the same as that person's photograph. They've just sent you that. The possession of that photograph should be irrelevant.
I know what you're saying, and I think I also know that I'm probably wrong. Like in my view,
you're not wrong, because it's just
kind of like the thing that I have always like wrangled with, and it's partly why like commercializing it, you know, it is it, like I said earlier, like I'm struggling to see the longevity of the project because what we're currently doing just isn't really working. Like, you know, I actually, I don't even mind if this bit is aired or not. But our household income is down by about 50% since I quit my job. And that can't continue. Like that can't continue. Because whilst this has never been about making me rich, it's also got a, it's got to pay the bills. Right. You know, and so I know what we're doing isn't really working. And I'm, you know, I'm at that stage where it's, it is kind of now like, okay, if we forget all the charity bit and we just look at it as a business model, how does the business model change to be more successful?
Right. Well, you are wearing many hats within that business. So why should you not be paid as the director?
Mm.
Why should you not be also paid as the artist?
Yeah.
You know, you can't do all of this work taking 50% less money than you had previously.
Yeah, yeah. I think I need, I mean, you know, and again, it's because it's a world I know nothing about. And it's like, I don't even really know where to begin with it or whatever, but I do need somebody that sort of knows what they're doing. Like, and I do, and I, but, and you know, maybe that's you, mate. I don't know. Like, you know, or you know, people or whatever, but it's like, but
there's got to be a, there's got to be a similar project, not necessarily within visual art, but there's got to be another project. What someone has started exactly the same as you, gone, oh, I've got this idea. It might be a book or something, you know, they've written this book for a charity and then it's blown up and then they're in a similar position or got themselves in a similar position to you where it's got so big that you're getting wrapped up in that fucking snowball you've created, you know.
Yeah, it is like that. And I think as well, it's also in a funny way, like taking the project full time has kept the project going. It's like, and do you know what, the other thing is I don't want to make it sound like this is, it's all like doom and gloom and I'm negative on it, because I don't regret the decision. Like we've raised another 150 odd grand since I decided to take it full time, so I don't regret that decision like one bit. Like it I wouldn't change it again. But the other thing is that in its sort of current setup, is it hasn't really, you know, one of the reasons for taking the project full time was to have more time to actually work, feeling like I was kind of like working on the project rather than just like in it all the time, you know, like when you said earlier about being surrounded by it all this. And I kind of feel like at the moment I'm not getting enough time to actually spend like properly, like on the project, if that makes sense. So still when we're all going to, you know, when we've got all of the bigger things going on and that, it kind of all still feels like it's all been done a little bit on the sidelines, because I'm having to spend so much time working on the bits that are paying the bills. Because again, in essence, it's taking me time because I don't really know what I'm doing. So it's all taking longer, you know?
I personally think that you need to step back of it, even just for a day, and just say, this bit's for the charity. This bit is for me, the artist. Don't put yourself in inverted commas, because then you're not taking yourself seriously.
I think I never have though.
But now it's not that laugh that it started out to be. It's not that gag anymore.
Yeah, yeah.
It's now become a serious thing. Inadvertently, people and pets have come to depend on you because of it.
Yeah, yeah.
So you have to start taking it seriously, because they are, for definite, and it's in their interest. So I would say, if you just separate the physical artworks, they're yours, and the online stuff, you know, they can be free. You can, as I say, you can send them a printed version on decent paper, but the original one on the shit bit of A4 from WH Smith's, that's the original, that is worth at least £299.
Yeah.
The other one can be for a donation, but the originals are yours. Then you have an exhibition, you sell all your ones. Have a look at Wilfrid Wood.
And I'll write that down.
W-I-L-F-R-I-D. He does the similar thing to you, but with people.
Okay, yeah.
He's an ex-spitting image puppeteer.
Oh, okay,
he used to make those. He's a mate of mine as well. But that's what he does. He does an exhibition. He invites these people in. He draws a portrait every day.
Yeah.
It will be either from a photograph or, and I've done it myself, I've gone and sat for him.
Yeah.
Just sat in there, just sat there, being his muse. He paints me. If I want to take it away, if I want to buy it off him, I get first dibs on it. Or I can just have the privilege of being painted, drawn by Wilfred Wood.
Yeah,
which
yeah.
Which is what
yeah.
yours should be.
Yeah.
That's the privilege. They can they can then have a copy of it that, if they're lucky enough for it to go online.
Mm-hmm.
That's their little, you know, that's their thing. They've got that for nothing. Or yeah. they can have a print of it if they want for a donation. Then that's the charity out of the way.
Mm.
And there's no reason why it can't be. You're an artist. Yeah. You've created art. You sell art. As soon as you realise that you're the artist, not...
I think you're mate, the... again, that's sort of maybe part of it is I struggle to, like, yeah, I mean, I've just, like, again, just had this huge sense of imposter syndrome.
Of course.
Like, with all of it.
I've spoken to professional artists who have been artists for 20-odd years who still say that.
Yeah.
So what is it? Let me ask you this, right? What is it you do for a living? You draw portraits. Who draws portraits? A fucking artist.
Yeah.
So whether you like it or not, whether you think it's a bit up yourself, you're the artist.
Yeah. Yeah. It's funny, actually, because when people do say sort of like, what do you do? I normally say, oh, it's a long story and try and change the subject.
Right, so you're making it hard for yourself then.
Yeah.
I'm an artist who... what is wrong with saying I'm an artist who draws rubbish portraits of your pet?
Yeah.
No disrespects. I didn't know of the name when Alice mentioned you.
Yeah.
As soon as I saw that fucking soppy dog with the ears up and a tongue out, the window or whatever it was, straight away knew who you were. So you have got notoriety or fame or whatever you call it. You just don't fucking know it yet, you know? And as soon as you understand that, it'll make it so much easier for you. If people want to come to see what you and your company are doing, is it called, what is the company called?
The website is HerculeVanWolfWinkle.co.uk.
Right.
Which is a moment where I wish I'd chosen a shorter fake artist's name. The other moment was when I had to get the signature tattooed on my ass, but that's a story for another day. And basically on the website, there's, you know, you can read all about the, you know, kind of like how it all started and everything else and the charity work and the fundraising and things. And then in the online sort of shop there, we've got, I do have some prints. I've got some limited edition prints of things T-shirts and bags and stationery. The audience that I have, my priority with the audience that I have is to promote and drive the fundraising.
Yeah.
So you know, I've written two books. One of them's actually a Sunday Times bestseller, which sounds far more fancy than it is.
So
I think
you're
author
and an artist.
Yeah. But we just got lucky on one week where, like, you know, sales of all other books were like down and mine sneaked in, like, you know. I think even the publisher was a little bit like, I'm not sure. I don't know if someone's on a wind up here.
Linda LaPlante is furious because you overtook her that week.
But people still go, you should write a book. And I go, yeah, I've done two. Like, they're out there. But it's because I just don't talk about it. You know, like, I just don't talk about it enough because...
What's the second book, the most recent one?
The most recent. So the first one was just simply called Rubbish Pet Portraits.
And was it just a picture book?
It was like you've seen my Facebook page. It's kind of like a light version of my Facebook page. So you'd get like, you know, like with my posts on Facebook, you get all the animals get a fake made up name.
Yeah.
And then they get, I write like a little bio. So, you know, like they like doing these things. And then there's the customer reviews, and it's the worst kept secret, but all the customer reviews are written by me. They're all fake. They're not like real customer reviews. And so the first book, Rubbish Pet Portraits, was just sort of like a light version of the Facebook page. So some of the pictures just had like maybe just the customer review, or some of them had like a little bit of the write up or whatever, but that was the first book. So picture that's been submitted by the customer, you know, my portrait and a little bit of sort of text. And I really loved the first book. Like, it was exciting, I guess, you know, like it was suddenly having like all of these publishers contacting like us wanting to do a book and things. And it was like, again, like somebody's risking their careers here, right? Like wanting to do a book with me. And I loved doing that first book, and it was a lot of work. Cause again, at the time I was working full time and stuff. And it was like the, you know, again, it was suddenly this slightly different spin on everything, you know, like it was probably one of the first projects that wasn't a laugh. Do you know what I mean? Like everything else had been a laugh. And then suddenly you've like got these publishers like with deadlines and stuff, but I loved it. And I was so proud of it. And it was actually the very first sort of tangible thing of the whole project. You know, because everything up until that point had all been online. It had all been, everything was just online in a time when we were in lockdown. So you weren't even really out seeing anybody or any of that. And then, so to be able to then like hold this book in your hand and go, but I did that. And honestly, I didn't really care whether we sold one copy as long as I had the one that I've got on my bookcase. Because like, you know, and I loved that. And then the second book, was called Who's a Clever Boy Then? And it's a book for dog lovers, basically. So it's moved away from the publishers felt that like my drawings stood up enough without needing that sort of forced humor of this is what the customer have submitted, if you know what I mean. Yeah. So the second book is just my illustrations rather than this is the dog I've drawn. And it's kind of like I'm a dog owner myself. We've got a dog, and it's like a look at, you know, sort of like the world of a dog owner, like through my eyes, you know. So each page is one of my illustrations and then a little kind of caption. So, you know, I mean, off the top of my head, you know, one of them is like something like, you know, did you know that when a sophisticated dog scooches across a carpet on its ass, it can tell you the pile depth, the thread count, and the, you know, country of origin of manufacture, and you know, that kind of stuff. And but I personally didn't enjoy the whole experience of the second book. It was never quite what I really wanted to do. And then actually, I won't go into a really long boring story, but it ended up that the deadlines ended up getting shifted and I had a very short window to write it as well. So it was all very, very stressful writing it. And that was actually, bringing it back to something earlier in the conversation, that was all around the time where I was ready to just give up on the project.
Yeah.
It was a very, very stressful like time. And so the second book, I've never really quite had that, like, you know, bit like your second kid, innit? You never love them as much as the first. And actually, I can joke and say that because we've only got one, right? So I am. So I've got the two books out and that. But like I say, people, I actually feel like I do bang on about the books, but like I obviously don't, because like I say, people still go, you should write a book. So part of the other problem with it all and commercializing it and stuff is just the fact that I also just don't really shout about it enough, because again, bringing it back to this thing about being protective about the fundraising, I would rather shout about the fundraising.
But if you're sitting there burning yourself out, Phil, it's going to affect the fundraising anyway.
Yeah.
If you're prospering, that will prosper.
Yeah.
There's no argument about it. Only in your head there's an argument.
Yeah, it's a bridge. It's a bridge I think I need to cross. I think that the issue is I probably need somebody to hold my hand to cross it. Like, you know, like, and somebody who really knows, like, what they're doing. And, you know, again, like I said earlier about that feeling of, like, being out of your depth and not really quite knowing which way to swim, like, you know, sort of really feel like I need somebody who can kind of at least point me in the right direction and kind of go, like, land is that way, you know, like, yeah. That's where you'll start to sort of find your depth. And again, not to say that I would then expect that to be an easy ride, like, but at least you feel like you're moving in the right direction rather than just like just about sort of treading water. And yeah, I need to be working with somebody that knows what to do. But I really do.
So you've got two books out. I presume you're doing a calendar.
Yeah, we got, so calendars are available like right now. And, you know, people get to look at a different one of my pictures every month. And they've only got to look at it for a month as well, which is quite good, isn't it? Because then you then you can look at another one. But I've actually done two calendars this year. So one of them is just the Hercule Van Wolfwinkle calendar. And then the other one that I've done is called Colour Your Year. And it's basically each month is a different picture, which has to be coloured in by the person who bought the calendar, which I thought would be a really fun. I thought, you know, it might be a really nice thing for people to kind of gift to like nieces and nephews and grandkids and stuff. The best route is Facebook, because that's kind of where I'm most active. So you go onto Facebook and it's Pet Portraits by Hercule. Which I don't think there's many other pages that are called that. So you'll you should find it.
Are you on Instagram and Twitter?
I'm on Instagram. So Instagram is, my tag on Instagram is Portraits by Hercule. Facebook is the biggest audience and probably the one I'm most active on. And there's a frequently asked questions post, which is pinned to the top of the page, which tells you everything that you need to know and not a single thing more. It's literally like, this is all you need to know.
Where can they find the book and your merch?
So the merch is herculevanwolfwinkle.co.uk. Again, like I said earlier, a minimum of 10% of all of our profits on the shop go to the charities. If I can also plug something, if you're on my website, if you can sign up to my mailing list, I would recommend doing that because it's completely free. I try not to bug you too much, but at least you will hear about all the important stuff, because it really is frustrating when there's important stuff going on and you're plastering all over Facebook, but Facebook decides not to put it on people's news feeds. And then they go, oh, we didn't know that was happening, or, you know, whatever. So if you can sign up to the mailing list as well, that'd be grand. The books are available in all bookshops, good and bad, basically. So the bad ones start with Am and end with Zon. The good ones are hopefully your local independent bookstore. But you can find them. In fact, you know what? You'll probably find them in the bargain bin of somewhere now. They're probably 50p somewhere. Or even your local library. If you don't want to buy them, you can probably get them in your local library as well.
Brilliant. Well, Hercule Van Wolfwinkle, thank you very much for your time.
Thanks for having me, man. It's been an absolute pleasure. All right then, my man. I'll speak to you soon.
See you later on.
Take care, Gary. Ta-da, mate.
Ta-da. Well, I hope you enjoyed that episode of the Ministry of Arts podcast. It's a podcast that's produced with the help of the listener. And if you like what you've heard and you think you might be able to give a little support, there's two ways in which you can do it. If you go over to the Ministry of Arts Instagram profile, you'll find a Linktree drop-down box. And in that box, you'll find two links. One is called Buy Us a Coffee, and it's pretty much that. You can make a one-off payment, the price of a cup of coffee. Or, if you're able and want to do it more long-term, you can become a Ministry of Arts Patreon, where you can sign up to support us on a monthly basis, and 100% of your support goes back into the podcast. And if you're not able to do that, that's absolutely fine. This content is free for everyone. But we would urge you to follow us on your socials and show us a bit of love that way. Either way, thanks for listening and see you next time. Ta-da.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.